Hello and welcome everyone to the most incredibly awesome special episode ever of MTG Potpourri, bringing you this, the specialist of all podcasts. Guys, this podcast is so special, it feels like cheating. There's just no other way to put it. We are just pulling the wool over. We're just shuffling all the episodes that came before this. This is number 20, the big 2-0. And bringing me this, the most amazing podcast ever, is Adam Staborski.
Hi, everybody. This episode was so special, I've had to change my pants twice already.
There's so many different ways you could go with that one.
It's mostly scotch and ice cream I'm spilling on myself.
Well, then you shouldn't be wearing underpants at that point.
I mean, I'm spilling scotch and ice cream on myself. It's nice to have a barrier.
Yeah, well, and this is one of those days that we really need to load ourselves up, because we have the fiery passion, and Tom is just going to be sitting back and just letting it wash over him. Is going to be Conley Woods going through the news of the week.
Huh?
What something happened today?
I just woke up. Where am I?
What happened?
What, I heard fiery or something. There's a fire?
Yeah, there's a fiery passion deep in the loins of a professional Magic player who's perturbed.
Oh, wait. I think I feel that somewhere. Yeah, maybe it'll come out.
I'll just touch a little bit more.
Hey, did you mention that the show is special yet?
It is very special.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure you mentioned that, because you know, it's kind of a staple and everything.
Yeah. If you've been listening, I probably said it about 16 times.
Oh. Well, I wasn't listening because I was asleep, remember? That's why I told you.
Because you just woke up. Because you were saving all that energy. You were the Snorlax coming out of its slumber.
Snorlax, that's an interesting choice of Pokemon to use for today's episode.
So. Yeah, I may have seen it on like a Facebook or Twitter something somewhere, and I don't know what it means.
Maybe, I'll explain later. Let's move on with the show.
Yeah, so we have kind of two big topic items to go through today. I say we go through the kind of quick one, which is our sort of Commando Ninja preview of a couple of new Commander 2014 cards. And then we'll just let all the stuff roll downhill and get into...
All right, well, while you guys talk about lame-o Commando, I'm going to go to sleep again. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay, there's nothing lame about this. We got two... Adam, tell people, how did these previews kind of leak out?
It wasn't a leak, per se. I mean, they showed up on Reddit in the morning, and the official article was published on Daily MTG in the afternoon.
Like a sieve.
Yeah, it was just kind of like a surprise, whether there was some sort of technical error or it was kind of like an intentional like tease, slow roll, kind of U-turn. It's not exactly clear, to us, but the cards were officially previewed today, so that's awesome. It was a great article. It's actually a really, really cool article. It was written by both Ian Fleischer and Ian Duke. Ethan Fleischer was one of the Great Designer Search 2, I want to say, winners, or was the winner. He kind of got a design job, and so this was his first design lead for a standalone product. I think he just did a lead design on Journey into Nyx. I'm going a little bit by memory here, but Ian Duke was the lead developer, and of course Ian Duke has been in Wizards R&D for a while, former professional player, all-around stand-up guy. Had talked to him many times, very thoughtful, and kind of seems to share a deep understanding of the game. So they kind of wrote an article together and kind of did like this back and forth where like they obviously wrote their parts separate, and then it was kind of merged together. And so this is really interesting. The designer's totally focused on what he was focused on and what mattered to him. And then, the developer would come in and talk about, the development side, and totally focused on what development need to do and get out of, the changes. They're talking about designing new planeswalkers and how all there's dials and things to change. So it's just really neat to see that kind of, construction in an article talking about both sides of the creating Magic coin. But the two previews are really sweet. We got to see a new mechanic. It's a multiplayer commander focused mechanic this time, called Lieutenant. And basically it's an ability word. It's just one of those italicized sets of text that says, hey, I care about something. And what Lieutenant cares about is if your commander is on the battlefield. So Angelic Field Marshal is two colorless and two white for a 3/3 flying angel. So Heather Lafferty, revised Angel on Twitter, is super excited because Angel, yay. But its Lieutenant ability is, as long as you control your commander, Angelic Field Marshal gets +2/+2, and creatures you control have vigilance. So basically, for 4 mana, if your commander's hanging around, you have a 5/5 vigilance angel for 4 mana. Oh, and all your other creatures have vigilance too. And so in their article, what they talked about was, you know, it's kind of a great way to reward commander play. So in a duel or even just general multiplayer, you know, the card is very fair. You know, 4 mana for a 3/3 flying is very solid. It's, you know, that would be a great pick in limited, certainly probably pushing the upper limits of what a common or an uncommon could do without a drawback. But it's only multiplayer that where people have higher life totals and you know, there's this commander rule in play and you have very specific deck construction. And if you build your deck to use your commander rather than just choose a commander to have the right set of colors to build a deck with, if you're actually saying, hey, this is the commander I want to use and have on the battlefield and do stuff with, your lieutenant cards are going to reward you for that.
Well, I mean, for myself, as you know, playing a lot of commander, this seems like a cool thing that would promote people to play a commander earlier than... Otherwise, it seems like unless somebody's playing a highly aggro commander deck, commanders tend to come out pretty late in the game. Well, this might be a reason to push it out sooner and have a little more interaction with the, you know, these really key cards for each deck and commander.
Yeah, I mean, I'm typically a fan of my commander should be something I want to cast often and use. You know, that's the biggest advantage of using... planning your deck around your commander card is that it's effectively an eighth card in your hand and it almost never goes away. You know, there's a very narrow set of interactions that would, you know, otherwise remove your ability to recast your commander.
And if you do that, you're a complete dickhead when people like shuffle it and stuff.
I mean, there are some commanders that I definitely tuck on site. So, I mean, let's not overgeneralize, but the, you know, Angelic Field Marshal is almost good enough that I just want to jam it into my Reese the Redeemed deck, which is a one mana, you know, green white commander that I almost always cast on turn one, you know, ultra aggressively because I want to start pumping out tokens on turn three. And the idea that I can cast a 5/5 flying vigilance that makes my army vigilant as well is really great. But I can also see just jamming it into like any of the Boros colored angels. They're all really aggressive, and throwing down somebody that's going to actually let you attack and leave your army up at the same time is really appealing. So even the angels that might come in, the commanders that come in later, benefit from it. It's just one of those really kind of neat ways to reward somebody who plans around their commander.
All right, we have spent a lot of time talking about what to me is the less exciting of the two previews that we got.
Well, let's not. I think it's really. I think it's actually really exciting. It's really interesting for red. So the other card is a new legendary creature. It's mono red. So one and double red for a 2/3 legendary creature, human artificer. And this is a throwback way back to Antiquities. You might have, if you played Magic way back in the day, you might have remembered a card called Veldin's Cane, which let you exile itself and shuffle your graveyard back into your library. So one of the original kind of recirculate your deck cards. This is Veldin of the Third Path. And his ability is really unique. Like, I can't really think of any other iteration of this ability. It's 2 in a red, tap, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target creature card in your graveyard, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. It gains haste, sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. So obviously Antiquities and Thanos and Felden, they were artificers that, you know, they're kind of obsessed with creating life from out of machines and turning life into machines and kind of this whole artifact building from the world kind of thing. And so his ability to create a token from a creature card, basically, you know, modeling with machines something that was previously alive, is really interesting. But it's the fact that it looks for a card in your graveyard that's really interesting. Typically, red has a dearth of kind of card advantage abilities, kind of in a general way to say it. So typically, red decks in Commander have a lot of ways of blowing up the battlefield and dealing tons of burn damage, big beefy dragons and ways to swing and things to do with artifacts.
I know a lot of ways to swing too. Adam.
Oh yeah!
Just in case
somebody say swing.
Yep. Yeah. Swing? Adam just went totally off the rails. He started about swinging all different types of ways and piqued my interest too.
I slept too long. Are we talking about the Trash for Treasure dude yet? I want to talk about the Trash for Treasure dude. He's pretty sweet.
I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Trash for Treasure.
The card? But who's the dude?
No, there's the new Commander card that Adam's talking about right now. I don't know his name. Felden, right? That's his name.
Yeah.
He reminds me of that Goblin Welder Trash for Treasure feel. I know he returns creature cards, which is obviously a little bit different. But when the fact that it does reference an artifact and it comes out of your graveyard, which is not a very red ability generally. I don't know. He's a pretty cool card.
Yeah, yeah. You're thinking of a Slowback Goblin Tinker, right?
I like that's another one too. I mean,
yeah, like, I mean, you know, the idea of like swapping a card out of the graveyard, like Red's done that with artifacts, but this is actually just a regular creature card. Getting like a copy of it, it feels similar to Kiki Jiki, but the fact that like you can use it after a Wrath has hit the battlefield and wiped out all of your awesome creatures, like getting copies out of the graveyard is great. You know, and the fact that you can just keep doing it over and over, it's not like a one time, like a puppet strings type effect where you just pull it out once and then it goes away. This is, you know, if you let me, I'll just keep casting Wyrmcoil Engine, a copy of Wyrmcoil Engine out of my graveyard, swinging, and then having two tokens left over at the end of the turn. Or casting, making a copy of Myr Battlesphere and having four Myrs left over at the end of the turn. It's one of those cards that in the right kind of deck, if you build around it, you're going to have a lot of iterative value, which is something that's really exciting for a color that often doesn't have that type of tool available to it.
And there's a chance that somebody wants to take advantage of the artifact clause too, like bringing back creatures and then tinkering them away or sacrificing the Karklan Ironworks or something is like a real possibility with this. So,
and Trading Post would also be kind of fun with this one.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the card is. There's a card that whenever an artifact creature enters the battlefield, you can make a copy of it.
Oh, it's from Scars of Mirrodin or something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's little synergies like that where, like, you're already going to use it with your regular cards, and then when you start recycling it with your commander, it just keeps getting better. And it has the same at the next end step, so you can use them during your end step and end up having two copies of it, just like you can with Kiki Jiki on... You know, you can have two copies of something in play on your turn.
Ooh, I'm trying to find the one that you're talking about that copies the artifact creatures that come into play.
I might just copy any, might just make a token copy of any creature.
Yeah, I think it was referring to Minion Reflector, which is Minion Reflector, actually that's from Sharp.
Yeah, it's an artifact that just makes a copy of anything.
Okay.
Any creature. But yeah. It works with this guy all the same.
Yeah, and like you said, just from a flavor standpoint, if people were played for a long time, Felden's Game was a very iconic card, you know, way back in Antiquities times, as you said, being the way to actually get your graveyard back. Everybody played with the Felden's Game in their deck because games went forever and you needed to have that ability.
I have a deck that has four in the sideboard still to this day.
I think the art is interesting. It's kind of like a Leonardo da Vinci sort of, I guess, vibe to me for the art of Felden. Is there any, I guess, books or like prior story about him? Oh, does he have like a lost love? Because he has a flavor text that says, "She will come back to me," and he's holding what kind of looks like a kind of an ersatz face in his hand in the art.
Yeah, I don't know the story, but I know that that was one of the things that the lead designer Ethan Fleischer really homed in on, is that there was a ton of old flavor and story and lore with the old characters in Magic, and this was one of the ways to kind of echo that and call that out. So I don't know his story exactly, but it certainly seems to imply some sort of lost love, seeking things. You know, he's making copies of artifact creatures from the graveyard, so the implication there, especially based on the kind of the feminine-esque artifact form in front of him, not just the head, but kind of like just behind it to the left, really seems to call, like he's trying to make a replica of the love of his life. That's what the story would seem to be, but I just don't know the details.
And also interesting that they didn't feature his cane more prominently, being that is the most, that's a card people think of when you hear the name Felden. He's clearly having a cane, but you can't see its head, which is really what is featured in the Felden Cane's art and the actual card.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm excited. I know Conley has gone back to sleep for a little while, but we'll poke him here pretty soon to wake him up. But I mean, so far the commander set looks exciting. If you're a casual commander player, it's hard not to be excited for this set so far.
Pumped.
I mean, do we just jump right into it?
I want to let Conley take the lead on this. Bear poking, Conley, wake up.
What am I taking the lead on? Huh?
It's your turn. The thing that you. We're switching topics. We're not talking about boring commander anymore, which is awesome.
We're talking about what you were kind of fired up and talking about today. If you're going to make special cupcakes, you first want to make sure that it's legal in your state. Once you've done that, you want to get a good all-purpose flour. That's... No?
Where would you get, like, very singular purpose flour?
I don't know.
God damn it, where's the magic cupcake flour? Goddamn gold medal.
All right, we're talking about cheating now.
I thought we were talking about playing the nose harp. I learned how to play the nose harp today from a 3-year-old.
That's a weird segue into cheating, but I guess I'll work with it.
Mm-hmm. It is not a segue in any fashion. I just want to play the nose harp on a podcast.
Fair enough. All right, so where we start with this whole cheating thing. All right, first up. Basically,
do it because everybody's doing it, baby.
Well, let's give the backstory. I think we talked about this on the last podcast a little bit. Am I correct?
I don't think we touched on it at all.
We didn't?
No.
There was no, it hadn't happened yet?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, it clearly was happening, but it was, people were not.
I thought, for some reason, I thought that we talked about Trevor for something, but I might have just talked about that on Skype.
No, because it was literally a week ago exactly to recording, so everything kind of went down over the weekend.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So basically what happened is there were some large events over the weekend. One of them contained the player Alex Bertoncini, who has a famed reputation and has been caught cheating on many occasions, including getting banned in the past. And this is kind of his re-entry back into the Magic world. He just competed at his first ever Pro Tour. So he was kind of a big deal, and people had a lot of eyes on him.
Yeah, he burned up on reentry, actually.
What?
He burned up on reentry, I'm pretty sure now.
Yeah, basically. So it started as kind of a, Alex is doing some weird stuff, let's pay attention to him. And they were weird things, like he brainstormed and then didn't put two cards back, and then cast a Force of Will and did some other stuff, and then... Basically, you know, it got caught later on. It was really fishy because he had done that in the past. So there were some, like, suspicions regarding Alex Bertoncini going on. Meanwhile, in Worcester, which is apparently how you say the city outside of Boston that is not spelled like that at all, there was, like, a Standard Open going on and some – I think it was, like, a Modern IQ. And they were streaming all of that through the SCG and Twitch. And while that was going on, people were noticing the eventual winner of the standard portion, Trevor Humphreys, was doing some kind of like shady shuffle techniques. And he went on to win the event and, you know, he was announced the winner and everything like that, took the pictures. But people were like, wait a second, like, let's kind of look at this video when it goes up because it's kind of weird. And there's a little bit of delay between when the video is live and when it actually is available to be viewed, like, in a video on demand form.
Oh, okay. That I didn't know. I was kind of curious how he kind of gotten deemed the winner, and then all of a sudden people were dissecting this footage.
Yeah, usually the footage will get edited or it goes up the next day. Worst case scenario, Twitch has like a hour and a half to 2 hour delay before it posts it as a recent stream. So, you know, they finish those events super late in the morning, so there's a good chance that, like, the replay didn't go up till 6 a.m. or something like that. Regardless, basically what ends up happening is the weekend finishes. Alex Bertoncini, a whole bunch of stories come out regarding a whole bunch of little cheats regarding him. The Trevor thing gets blown up and put under a microscope. People have video evidence. They have little documents, like with like drawings and stuff showing how he cheated, and there's like slow-mo versions of it, and there's, you can go through Reddit, you can go through YouTube, you can find all kinds of evidence of this guy cheating on camera, basically. And the way he would do his cheat, Trevor was very consistent. Alex Bertoncini is famous for being a sloppy cheat. Basically what he does is he plays very sloppy, walks you into situations that are really awkward for you, and then messes up, quote unquote, and when you mess up and don't pay attention to something, he takes advantage. So he'll draw an extra card here or there. He'll play an extra land here or there. He'll anti-mulligan. He'll, you know, he's probably stacked a deck. He basically does every cheat, but he doesn't do them all consistently. He'll just do whatever works at that particular point in time. Trevor, on the other hand, his cheat was very consistent. What he was doing was while he was shuffling, he would take a card, specifically a non-land card. He would get it to the bottom of the deck, and he would be shuffling in such a way that he could see the deck while he was shuffling it. His opponent's deck, excuse me. So he's shuffling his opponent's deck. He can see he could see all the cards. He would find a non-land card, get that to the bottom of the deck, and then thumb it, and he would actually use a finger, like his middle finger, pull that card down, slide it underneath the deck, and put it on top. Then the top of the deck would never get shuffled into the rest of the deck for the remainder of the shuffle. He would continue to do this, find another non-land card, thumb that down, put that on the top, do that over and over again until he thought there was enough non-lands to successfully present the deck back to his opponent, who is no longer allowed to cut his deck anymore. That was removed back in the day. You cannot voluntarily cut your own deck after it's been presented to you by your opponent. So he would give them their deck back. They would draw their opening hand. It would have one or less lands. They would mulligan. He would do this again. They would mulligan. He would do this again. They would usually keep like a one land hand on the mold of five and then go on to lose. Time and time and time and time again, this happened on video. People caught the specific hand actions. They caught multiple opponents continuously mulliganing to five and losing, including the finals opponent. And it obviously was just so apparent that the DCI was alerted, complaints were made, etc. Today, the DCI basically came out and announced that Trevor was banned for 4 years. He basically got caught red-handed and busted, so he's gone. His prize has been removed by Star City Games from himself and given to charity, something that I don't think is necessarily the right move, but that's neither here nor there right now. And then Bertoncini, who also won some money, he was reviewed by the DCI at the same time that Trevor was, through all the video footage that he had, through all the testimonies that they had, and he came out of this being banned for an additional 3 years on top of what he was already banned for back in the day, which was, I think, 2 years before. So he's banned an additional 3 years now. And, pretty big deals. People were pretty happy to see that got some cheaters out of the community, but it also made, you know, worried people a little bit, because when you don't think people cheat, and then when some high profile people are caught, it kind of, you know, makes you think, you know, is anyone cheating against me? What do I do against this? It's kind of scary stuff.
Yeah, I guess that would be the question. As somebody who doesn't play a lot of tournaments, or say like maybe an up and coming, you know, the sort of PTQ player, what are the cheats that people should be watching for? Say you see somebody shuffling oddly that you're playing, like what should somebody do?
Well, now, it's a super difficult question, just because there's so many ways somebody could cheat you. Overall experience is going to be your biggest aid here, right? Just learning about different types of cheats, seeing people do it, hearing stories, etc. I can give some of the common ones right now, and I'll specifically highlight I just highlighted the weird shuffling, I guess, of Trevor. Another player who we can discuss in a little bit, Jared Betcher, who I believe will also be banned by the end of the week. And if he's not, I would be extremely surprised. There's a ton of mounting evidence against him doing a very similar thing as Trevor. So that's apparently a common cheat, the idea of stacking a deck. Jared does it a little bit differently. I'll explain that a little bit, so that you could maybe defend yourself against that. But like defending yourself against Alex or any player of that nature, it's really just about paying close attention. Too many people give their opponents credit when they should not be. Like, your opponent is not just inherently a good person when it comes down to playing the game. I know we all want to think they are, but ultimately you need to protect yourself. You're making an investment by entering that tournament. You're spending your money to try to win a prize. And if you're not willing to protect that, I guess some people, that's their prerogative. If they want to be casual about it and not put any effort or stress out about it, I guess that's totally reasonable. There is a decent chance they will never get cheated. So, I mean, you're taking a risk that could pay off. But if you want to make sure you do not get cheated, you really just have to be vigilant and pay attention. There's the biggest points that somebody can cheat you are going to be in their opening hands. People can always have more or less cards than they should. They could, stack their deck, things of that nature. So you need to, the setup of the game is a very important point to pay attention to any type of cheating. And then once the game is starting, the biggest points are making sure they're not drawing extra cards, so paying attention to how cards come off their deck, how many they are, what's the ritual doing it. Some people like to drag a card across the table. Some people like to just sweep it right to their hand. And then also just like how many lands they're playing. Like all of the kind of obvious rules. Like there are going to be some super advanced cheats that you're not going to really understand what's going on, but you're going to get that sense of something fishy going on. Like your opponent's trying to bring something out of the graveyard very slowly or something. Like I've literally seen this happen where people, you know, will have something dead and over multiple turns they will try to scoot it into play, and eventually their opponent just doesn't realize that, you know, that is somehow got reanimated without a card ever being cast on it. So there are like super advanced cheats like that that, you know, you're not going to necessarily catch like the concept, but you're just going to see some weird stuff going on. You're going to have to pay attention and protect yourself. There are all kinds of advanced cheats, like the drop kick that we've discussed before, where your opponent will drop one of the cards from your deck on the ground and kick it over to your side of the table, and then basically count your deck and be like, hey, it's 59 cards, you lose, haha, because, you know, they dropped one of your cards. And then you're going to look for it, and you're like, oh, my thing's on the ground, how did I present a 59-card deck, blah, blah, blah. That's like a pretty hard one to catch, although if you do get caught, you're pretty done for. But there are all kinds of just little edges that people are going to get. They're going to not mark damage from their pain lands. They're going to not take damage from their fetch lands. It's little things like that you have to pay attention to, because those types of things add up and really get people, give them a little bit too much breathing room when it comes to how vigilant we are about protecting ourselves.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, is this something that we should be it's tough. It's always kind of disappointing when you see this coming, kind of happening. Is it a surprise that, I mean, Twitch and live streaming of games is not new, especially for like SCG Live, you know, big Wizard tournaments? Is this something, are people going to start going back to even previous coverage? Or, I mean, obviously,
I believe so. Okay. A lot of people are turning up some, as much evidence as they can on a lot of people that, you know, I don't think that we should be quote unquote witch hunting. I don't like that term because I think it's stupid and gives that wrong idea. But people are saying, you know, don't go chasing down every player and just examining their career under a microscope, which is true. We should not just be picking people out of a hat. But there are some people that there are some strong suspicions about. And if, you know, people want to take their own free time and investigate that person and look up footage and they find some evidence, like, you know, what are you supposed to say about that? Like, it's their prerogative to do so, correct? And the footage, the evidence is potentially out there and available, so there's going to be somebody digging it up. I don't think as a community we should be, you know, having groups filing teams and looking through this footage systematically or anything of that nature. But, you know, some individuals are going to do that, and that's one of the benefits of having things on video. But the video is certainly the reason that more and more cheaters are being caught these days, and, you know, that's a big deal. I mentioned Jared Betcher earlier. Basically what happened was he, amongst those investigations of Burton Cheney and Trevor Humphreys, apparently Jared Betcher was also investigated because there's some allegations against him. I saw in a couple places on various media, people mentioned that, hey, Jared Betcher was also investigated. That's kind of odd. And he would always be the first person to respond to this. Jared would be. And he would basically put, yes, the DCI found what I did to be totally reasonable and not cheating. And they've already done a check into this and they deemed not cheating. Stop the witch hunt. And he replied to this on like multiple people's Facebook posts about it. At least one Twitter thing. Evan Irwin retweeted a tweet by him that said this exact thing of stop the witch hunt. I've already been condemned not cheating. And as somebody who has a background in psychology, it really kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because this guy was really coming out and defending himself vehemently against something that had not necessarily been really put out there. Like a couple of random people on Reddit made posts about it, and obviously he got investigated, so there was something there, but it really wasn't a giant community issue yet. Nobody really had any eyes on Jared Betcher, and all of a sudden he was coming out and like defending himself, like just kind of out of the blue. And it felt very, you know, I'm guilty sort of feeling, like I, you know, Hey guys,
I didn't do it.
Let's throw this under the rug while before it goes.
There's no bodies in my trunk.
Exactly.
Weird.
So I was like, yo, like if you didn't do this, like chill out. Let people sort through with their footage or whatever. You know, your behavior is going to speak for itself at the end of the day. And if you're guilty, you're guilty. And if you're not, you're not. And ultimately, people are going to keep condemning you if no evidence is found in this video. So, like, you coming out here and saying stuff is not going to do anything for your reputation. Just, like, wait it out. And sure enough, after that happened, more and more video evidence started amounting. I'm willing to say that he is a cheater at this point, and a pretty savage one at that. Literally every single piece of footage we found, every single shuffle that his opponents would make, ultimately what he would do is he would find a single card and the bot. He would look at his opponent's deck while he was shuffling it. He would look at the bottom of his opponent's deck, find a land this time, not a non-land, but a land, specifically a fetch land if he could do so, but sometimes just a land. And he would put that land on the bottom, and then he would do a side, like, three-card kind of cut shuffle, and he would make sure the last card in his right hand would be the bottom card of the deck, and he would make sure that ended up on top of the deck. And then from there, he would do a bunch of fake cuts and fake shuffles, but the top of the deck would never move. He would present to his opponent would always draw a land. Most of the time, including one match, he gave his opponent three fetch lands in a row, which is especially important because it allows him to do this again. He actually just locks his opponent out of the game to drawing another fetch land every turn of the game, which is absurd. And this happened over and over. I can point to literally a dozen pieces of video or a dozen different matches or pieces of video evidence from people that have him doing this exact same thing. He doesn't do it his own deck. The way he shuffles his own deck is very different. He mixes it up very well. The top card moves all the time. Doesn't do anything there. But he has the exact same pattern and the exact same cheats in every single shuffle opportunity from his opponent. And there's slow motion videos of it at this point. There's a bunch of different matches to choose from, a bunch of different formats to choose from, and he just does it over and over again. It's quite ridiculous. He has not actually been condemned of anything yet. He hasn't even, as far as I know, gone back in investigation on the DCI. One of the projects we kind of went through today was a Reddit collection of evidence against him that we are sending into the DCI to get an official investigation opened up against him again, because they already did, apparently, according to him, clear him of an investigation last night. That's not official. That's from Jared Betcher's mouth, so I can't even say it's an official announcement. But basically using the exact same cheat as Trevor Humphreys. They're both New York guys, so the link was pretty heavy there. And like I said, he won Rookie of the Year last year, so that's – it makes me a little sad because somebody got robbed of that opportunity. There's only two yearly awards given out. There's Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year. That's really one of the longest standing traditions in Magic. And somebody who played clean, I think Ray Perez specifically, who played clean, played hard, and did a lot of stuff last year, was robbed of his opportunity to earn Rookie of the Year. And as somebody who has kind of been in that situation, not for Rookie of the Year, but just in any type of award situation, I know how important that kind of stuff can be to keep you motivated and going, and that really sucks. So I hope that some justice comes of that situation. I would be very, 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 very surprised if by our next podcast, Jared Betcher has not been banned for some amount of time. He just does it so often in so many different circumstances that you remember, these are all on camera. What they're doing off camera is probably tenfold. It's absurd. So, yeah, it's been kind of a bittersweet day. It really sucks to know that cheating exists and is happening under our eyes. You know, a lot of these shuffle cheats, people watch them all happen live and nobody caught it. These are very talented people. Like, some of the cheats that Jared does, unless you really know what you're looking for, it is very easy to miss. So it really sucks that people are getting away with this, but it also alerts us, makes us more diligent about protecting ourselves. And, you know, hopefully these people are leaving the Magic community, and that's good for everybody, I think.
And from kind of from your side, Conley, for maybe somebody who's new to higher levels of professional play, also there's this huge document about, I guess I would call them the floor rules for professional Magic. Are there some key ones that people should be aware of that maybe aren't enforced very often? Like a lot of things that you mentioned is people, the I will say the cheaters there, they're looking at the opponent's deck as they shuffle. Is that not part of the floor rules that they should not be viewing the cards? No,
that's absolutely part of the floor rules. You're not supposed to look at anybody's deck, but they get away with it because they do it in a very sly way where they're not looking at it at all times. They take one glance down at the bottom card for like half a second. If it's the card they're looking for, then their entire setup is good to go and they don't have to look down at the deck again at all. So it could be very difficult to catch because they could just literally glimpse down with one eye and be set up to go. If it's not the card they're looking for, it might take them, you know, a couple more shuffles or whatever, and then they can get caught. Trevor was very obvious with his shuffling, and we have eye cam, so he was very easy to catch because he constantly looked down at the deck. He did it really poorly. He was very sloppy. Jared's significantly smoother with his, and his technique, instead of thumbing it under the deck, like I said, he does a side shuffle where the last card in his right hand is the bottom card of the deck, and then that gets set gently on top of the deck. It's a lot harder to catch because the camera's always overhead. We don't have any eye cams for all these older footages, and it's a lot harder to detect. But once you slow it down and you know what you're looking for, it becomes very, very blatant and obvious. It's not even a matter of like, oh, we could be doing this. It's like, no, I literally watched 50 different cuts of him taking his deck and putting it into each other. Like, you take half the deck and put it into the deck again, like from the side, when you're holding it from the side. I watched him do this over 50 times with the top card never moving. You can't do that unintentionally. That's not a thing. You have to intentionally be doing that. Then when he has his deck in his hands, he's just doing the exact same thing with the whole deck being sorted, the top card's moving freely. Never once does the top card stay still. It's like, you can't just shuffle your deck like that naturally and shuffle your opponent's deck in the other way naturally. One of those two ways is not natural, and I'm going to guess it's the one that gives you the huge effing advantage, you scumbag. So, I don't know. It's very damning evidence, in my opinion. And like I said, I'm glad to get some cheaters out of the Pro Tour. This was somebody who a lot of people looked up to. He played some rogue and interesting strategies. I actually thought he was a pretty reasonable deck builder. But if he was getting his success by taking advantage of people, then all that's kind of for naught, in my opinion. So,
I mean, from your side,
we move on with a cleaner MTG after today. But it has been a gruesome line of events to follow.
But I mean, is this something, like you kind of mentioned, you know, previously players had the ability to, you know, to cut their own deck. It seems like we've had three high profile incidences in under a week. Do you feel like Wizards needs to address this with, you know, altering those floor rules of somehow changing where players have a little bit more agency over their own deck at this point?
People think it's that simple, but I don't think it's that simple, because the whole reason that the idea of cutting your own deck at the end it became outlawed was that theoretically that's the easiest way to cheat, is you just have one marked card in your deck or one set of marked cards in your deck, and when you go to cut your own deck, you make sure you cut to that card, and then bam, you have it on top. So let's say it's your Tri-Land or, you know, whatever in Limited, like you could just set up your entire deck and be good to go. And apparently that cheat is just too easy to execute and too easy to have access to, that they wanted to get rid of it by not letting you manipulate your own deck in any way after your opponent's manipulated it. Now, they could find some like middle of the ground tool where your opponent is forced to cut the deck at the end of the shuffling, like in front of you, they have to put the deck down and then cut it, like a dealer, something like that. But it's not really as cut and dry as, you know, one way or another. It really is up to the players to protect themselves, and they can call a judge. They can, you know, if they think anything shady, feel free to put your hand in the air. Like, rather offend your opponent than be cheated out of a match win. And that's what a lot of these people ended up having, is like Dave Shields against Jared Betcher. He watches him look at his deck while he's shuffling, and he's like, "Hey, dude, I saw you do that. Don't do that." And he like, calls him out on it. And, you know, although it didn't reform Jared's ways, because Jared continued to cheat later on, for the remainder of that match, Jared did not really take the opportunity to cheat because he knew Dave was watching him. He knew Dave was paying attention, and, you know, he can't risk it. So at least by Dave speaking up, he protected himself for that match, even though he didn't get Jared punished or officially penalized or anything.
All right. And what about from your side as coverage?
I mean, I don't want to speak for professional coverage in general.
No, have you ever, as like a coverage person where you are, you know, obviously watching a lot of games, have you ever felt uncomfortable about what you were seeing, like in a shuffling standpoint or other things? You and maybe you didn't know what to do if you weren't the actual player?
I've never really been in that situation for a couple reasons. One, I'm just not as as experienced and aware. Honestly, you know, typically playing Commander, very low key situations, casual drafts, casual sealed matches with buddies. You know, it's very low key, and we'll do things like, you know, okay, we got a six land, you know, I got a six hand. It's very sketchy. Okay, we'll look at the top card of your deck. You know, okay, are we going to play Magic? Okay, good. Let's just, you know, let's play. Like, keep the sketchy keep. Like, obviously, you know, Mull of Five is really bad, but let's just try to play Magic. You know, so it's very loose. Like, I'm not typically tuned to, you know, what, you know, identifying things that are off-putting or something might strike me as strange, just because I'm not familiar enough to know what's strange and what's not. I'm also generally focused on the gameplay and player banter, and my eyes are darting back and forth between the article I'm writing and do I have the opportunity to do a good camera photo at this point, how much time is left in the round, you know, what's going on social media. There's a lot of things going on in the background of coverage where, you know, I'm typically not focused on the match, and even like the table judge. So like almost all video matches have a judge sitting right there at the table. And, you know, it's finally kind of caught on in the community, but for the longest time, players would come to the table and assume that judge would answer judge calls and be there to enforce game state. And really that judge is a staff position, more or less relaying information to the coverage team. So every coverage setup I've seen has somebody there making sure, you know, making note of life changes, you know, calling out, cards and spells that have cast, targets, spell choices, the size of creatures if things have changed, you know, basically relaying that information so the viewers at home can follow along easier because the commentators are having that information passed to them. You know, so even though there's a judge right there, they're not looking for those things. They're distracted with the production element of what's going on with the matches. You know, the only time there's a situation where, you know, I should back up a half step. So typically, you know, the perspective that's been instilled in me by some veterans that I've talked to and worked with in the past, has been, you know, effectively coverage should be more or less, invisible text coverage. You know, I'm there to observe and document and listen after the match is over, you know, a little bit of interview or follow up questions to make sure that I have the right context and understanding of what actually happened. And if there's anything relevant that should be added to the match information, you know, but like during the match, you know, I should not be interfering or asking questions or looking at cards or doing things that get in the way of those players completing their game. The only time where a situation came up where I felt like I needed to get involved was at a Grand Prix quarterfinal match. Very nervous young player, his first Grand Prix top eight. He was looking for a very specific land, you know, a specific basic land to put into play, and instead he played the other one, then played a card that drew him a card, which he, you know, if he had just played the card that drew him a card first, he would have drawn into the land he needed to play. So it was this very awkward moment of, you know, sequencing, played the wrong land, it ended up, you know, that was game two, it was the deciding game, he was already down, so... but the, you know, the judge that was there to observe the matches, again, not the table judge who's there relaying information, but this is a judge actually watching the matches, noticed my reaction for a split second as you know, as the player, you know unintentionally, very obviously unintentionally, you know, made an illegal game action, and I was just kind of backed up quick, and that was that. You know, it was very much not a weird, like, you know, something's going on here and let me call a judge to the side. You know, there's been situations where another judge watching or observing again might stop a player and check their deck or look for marked cards. You know, again, there are judges that are actively trying to be vigilant about marked cards, and especially at the end of a tournament when shuffling has taken its wear and tear, oftentimes they can become unintentionally marked. And that's, you know, that's something to keep in mind, is that, you know, after 2 days of shuffling your deck, you know, 8, 9, 10 times a match sometimes, or more, or game more, you can end up, you know, needing new sleeves. So, you know, there are other people that look for those things. It's not something that I focus on or take note.
What about, like, for Christmas when I was maybe about 10, I got one of those automatic card shufflers. You know, they're like $7-$8 where you put the you take the deck, you split in half, and it just automatically mushes them together. But is that something where would you take shuffling out of the hands of the players and humans and put it into the job of a robot or a machine?
Well, currently that does not work with magic sleeves or magic cards. Also,
if we can put a man on the moon, I can make a card shuffler that's a little bigger that'll handle a plastic sleeve.
Well, you can't because there's not a card shuffler on the market currently that has a 0% damage rate. They all have some percentage. And if you're putting your product, if you're putting a risk out there that 0.001% that you lowered it down to ruins somebody's Tropical Island beta in Legacy, you're effed as a company. Like, you can't have any chance of risk to the cards at all because people won't play with
your product. I would, I guess, take the exact opposite sense. Like, if you're letting your opponent shuffle, I mean, like,
you that's not the human mind works. You feel like you can catch a cheater with your bare hands, and you also feel like if your $100, $500, $5,000 investment gets damaged without you being able to stop it because you're using a mechanical machine, you'll never forgive yourself. Whereas you could catch a cheater. I could definitely spot him doing whatever. I'll take that risk because I know I'll be able to defeat it. Like, it's a very different mindset. So you're not going to get your product's just not going to sell if it has a chance of damaging cards, and there's not a product that doesn't do that.
See, that'd be kind of exciting.
I actually have a very different reason that you wouldn't use a mechanical shuffler, or actually wouldn't be allowed to use a mechanical shuffler, and that's because it's driven by an algorithm. It's run by a piece of, you know, probably some software in a little driver runs the shuffling mechanics. You know, it's an algorithm that tells them the pieces of the shuffler how to operate. So here's the question: how effective is that at randomization? Because there's a very real chance that, given, you know, the ability for a lot of people to do aftermarket modifications
I'm not gonna let Jared
things
touch
that are like that, like it could literally given. You know, shuffle in a way that is not quite as randomized as thought, or especially over time. If it is randomized but it skews very slightly over time, that slight skew can show up in games where, oh, okay, great, if I separate my lands and my non-lands and then run it through the shuffler, you know, 18 times, you know, I start getting close to, you know, I'm closer to a mana weave than not, and that's a pretty consistent thing. You know that's a problem too. You know, interesting thing about shuffling, so talking about damage from like an automated shuffler, I played in exactly two sanctioned Legacy tournaments. In my first one, I sit down round two against a high tide player, and he literally stopped me twice in the match and basically insisted that I pile shuffle because, you know, God forbid, you know, I actually riffle shuffle his candelabras, which is really frustrating. And had I known, I would have said, you know, do you want to call a judge, instead of just pile shuffle to make him happy, because really it's just I want to shuffle, and I shuffle heavily and I shuffle a little hard. And over time, you know, most people that shuffle like I shuffle, which is most people who shuffle, they end up causing, you know, slight warp and wear and tear in cards anyway. So the idea that somehow you can shuffle without damaging cards is a little bit of a ruse. Like, even if you pile shuffle carefully, you know, just a quick corner catching on the table or something like that, you can bend a card. So there's no perfect way of perfectly preserving cards yet mechanically randomizing them repeatedly. That's just not going to happen. You're always going to end up some damage over time. But, you know, that even then, you know, I could imagine sitting down with an opponent and having the shuffler and saying, great, this is a DCI certified perfect shuffler. And the opponent going, I am not putting my cards in there because, you know, either I don't know it's really the software, the algorithm running it, and also be like, it could possibly damage it, you know, and you have this just a different place where players argue over how something should be shuffled anyway.
I would like to interject here before you move too far from, I guess it was already not quite the topic, but whatever. The idea of riffling your opponent's deck, I am okay with you doing it in limited 100% of the time. Outside of that, I don't think you should
based solely on respect for your opponent, there are plenty of ways, not just pile shuffling. You could do plenty of side shuffling. You could do laying down the cards. You could literally wish-wash them all on the table if you want. Literally anything. But, like, if I hand you my vintage or my legacy deck that's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars and you riffle shuffle it, I'm literally punching you in the face. I'm standing up and I'm punching you directly in your face. I don't care how thrown out of the tournament I am, because it's just the most disrespectful thing you could do, is you're just saying, hey, this property, it's like running through mud and then jumping in my Lamborghini. It's like, sure, you could do it, but why would you do it? It's just rude. So, like,
I mean, the comparison is
unless you know your opponent or you know the cards they have. Go ahead.
I was gonna say I think a closer comparison would be, you know we're coming home from the store, card store, and decide, okay, you can drive home. I'm a little tired. Just drive me home. And there are three roads into the neighborhood, and you always take the road that has no turns and no bumps. And I take the road with bumps and turns, and that makes you mad because it creates additional wear and tear on the car. I can understand how riffle shuffling can be viewed as disrespectful. But nobody has ever actually come and told me and pointed to me and said, you know, the way you shuffle your deck is just super disrespectful. Like, that is never a conversation I've had in my life. And so it just, you know, it's just kind of, you know, like, I can understand. Like, it's not like I don't understand kind of that perspective, but it's like seven riffle shuffles effectively randomizes a Magic deck. And so that's seven what I like to do. I like to run every deck shuffle through seven riffles, and that randomizes the deck.
But it doesn't have to be a riffle. You could do a seven side shuffles, and that gets you the exact same. It's the 100% exact same randomization, as long as you're willing to make sure the top and the bottom cards don't stay put. But all I'm saying is, like, sure, I know people like Owen Turtenwald riffles his opponent's decks or whatever, but I don't think he would do so in Legacy, and I don't think he would do so in Vintage. And if his opponent, like in Modern or something, stopped him and was like, hey, my deck's all foil, please do not riffle it, he would not riffle it. He just does so by default. But, like, I think you have to have some boundaries somewhere. You can't just be like, well, I'm riffling 100% of the time, don't care. Because there are plenty of ways to randomize that are not riffling. And sometimes your opponents are not going to be okay with that. Pile shuffling will not randomize your deck, that's true, so don't rely solely on that. But like I said, some simple side shuffles where you're just picking up half the deck, fanning it out, and then pressing it back into the other half of the deck doesn't bend any cards and does randomize quite a bit. If you're paranoid about seven of those not being enough, you could do it 20 times or whatever. Like, anything to just respect your opponent's wishes and not damage their property, because some people can't afford to replace any cards, and, you know, there's this very small chance of you hurting any cards. It's not like you're 100% of the time damaging something, but there's just no reason to take the risk, in my opinion.
Yeah, and to be clear, that's why I didn't call a judge or think to call a judge and just pile shuffle, because that, you know, I can understand, you know, being respectful like that. You know, he asked me twice, because the first time, you know, I just did what I always do. Okay, pile shuffle. And the second time is because I forgot. You know, you just start going on autopilot at certain points, and I just didn't, you know, I wasn't cognizant of thinking I need to stop and pile shuffle this deck when he hands it to me.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not like I wasn't trying to be mean.
No, I didn't think you were trying to be malicious. I don't think most people are trying to be malicious. They're just doing exactly what you said, which is just they riffle their own cards and they're fine with that. So they're fine with doing it with their opponents. And most of their opponents will be fine with it, and you're going to go away without any problems. But like I said, if your opponent at least steps up and asks you not to, like, maybe, you know, pay attention to the tone of their voice or something. You don't want them to, like, get one over on you, and you still want to make sure you randomize that deck very, very well. But you can respect what they're requesting, just because it is their property.
So that's a follow up question I have for you, Conley, to kind of jump into to the role Tom usually has. So I'm not as familiar with, you know, the floor rules and tournament procedure rules. What does it actually say about shuffling? Like, I assume at some point, like, you've come across it or looked this up. Like, you know, do you have any familiarity with, like, what it actually says?
So there's some weird rules, actually, that take place, especially at Grand Prix and Pro Tours and PTQs, etc. If you're at a Pro Tour and you shuffle your deck and you present it to your opponent and your opponent just cuts the deck, that's at least a warning, if not a game loss. It's insufficient randomization of your deck, which is a penalty on them. So you're actually required by, well, you are, yeah, I'll say required just to make it easy. You're required to shuffle your opponent's deck whenever they present it. A cut is not sufficient. Once that has been done, once you finish shuffling their deck, the deck cannot be altered in any way. Your opponent can't cut it. They can't even take a single card and move it around. Basically, they just put it back in its place and start drawing off the top like they normally would. So outside of that, there's not a ton. Like, you can't look at cards. You're supposed to shuffle with the cards facing away from you or in such a way where, 'cause they don't actually have in the rules where it says, like, your head must be turned to the left or anything like that. Because some people obviously could not do that for whatever limiting reasons. So all it says is do not, hold the cards in such a fashion that you don't have direct line of sight, blah, blah, blah. And all those rules get broken all the time on accident. People are just not paying attention, or they're shuffling in such a way that they could see the deck, but they're not actually taking advantage of that opportunity. And so as a result of little things like that over time happening, people really drop their guard and they go, oh, it's a harmless dude. Like, Trevor was like a very handsome, good-looking dude that people are going to just give credit to because, they find him appealing. And so when he's making small talk and talking with the judge to his right and laughing and stuff, you're going to miss the fact that he's looking at the bottom of your deck and stacking it. And he did that time and time again on camera and was getting away with it simply because the opponent was giving him credit for doing so. So it's the shuffling rules will protect you to a very small degree. Like I said, it's mostly about you paying attention to your own match and what's going on.
Oh, God, I just woke up again. Jesus.
I knew it.
Took a little nap there. Just dreaming about that bowl of cereal that I always have after we podcast. We need something positive, guys. Before everybody on the planet decided to start cheating at Magic, we found out that FNMs are going to be getting a little bit more exciting in the near future. Adam, I figured you would be pretty excited to talk about this.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not. I kind of have a strong opinion about one kind of minor aspect of it. Basically, it's something that they announced during the Pro Tour 2 weeks ago, and it's more or less just any event, any format, anything can be sanctioned as FNM. And so that means, your four-player commander games, that can be FNM. Your cube draft, that's FNM, sure. Your pauper standard, your pauper old extent, double standard old, new extended format, and any kind of combination or invention or two-player formats like Winston draft can be an FNM. Basically, anything can be considered a sanctioned event for the purposes of being registered as an FNM by a store, and stores can have up to. I actually don't know. No, I want to say at least three sanctioned FNMs, or three that they can advertise and kind of schedule for the Wizards Event Finder and things like that. But basically, this change lets store owners and their communities decide what formats they want to advertise and kind of sanction for Friday Night Magic. There are two reasons that I can see this change coming in. The first is pretty obvious, is that they changed how promos work for stores. So now, based on the store level, and you can talk to your TO about, what the WPN store levels are and what it means. But basically, it's just the bigger and more events you have, the higher up you can move in a specific tiering of the stores. And so there are three levels, core, advanced, and advanced plus. And the higher you go, the more promos you get per week. And the idea is that the promos are no longer tied specifically or explicitly to performance in FNM. So FNM, because these formats don't always lend themselves to being tournaments, or a tournament structure, which is something I would strongly say should not be associated or related to Commander. Don't do a Commander tournament. It's just bad juju. now store owners can choose how to give those permits out. So they could be effectively like door prizes, like everybody's name goes in a hat. Did you come for F&M? Did you pay and sanction? Great. Here's your bonus planeswalker points. Oh yeah. And here's your, here are the people that randomly get a promo. You know, or it can be split. You know, if there's a big standard tournament, there's a big sealed tournament, maybe they'll have promos for prizes for those. But then they got some other ones, you know, a bunch that are left over specifically for giving to, you know, the a cool commander pot or the four commander guys that are like, well, we don't play standard and we don't play draft, but we come in and we buy a bunch of stuff every week because we're always building these wacky decks. They can get a promo and you know, a note on their planeswalker points that they played F&M commander. You know, the other thing that's kind of neat with it is that stores that have a different, you know, every store is kind of a little unique. And so there's a perception that every store is a bunch of competitive types that just sit down and they're there and it's very sharky and everybody battles all the time and F&M is super competitive and, you know, some other things. And it's really not like some stores are like that. And I certainly know ones local to me, but I also know stores that are local where they literally invent their own formats and everybody gets in on it. And everybody builds these fun decks or different decks and wants to do something different. And it just gives the stores the option and the choice and the ability now to officially do whatever makes sense for their group. So instead of having to force standard and have everybody, you know, voluntarily opt into some sort of additional rule for the decks, now that's just, that is the rule. And if you want to play, you have to do that. And now it's, you know, it's official and above board and you know, kind of legitimizes what different stores do to build their own audience and core customer group.
I mean, for you guys, both Conley and Adam, is there a format that previously wasn't F&M sanctioned that you would be excited to see maybe played more widely, like Cube? Are there ones that you would like to see people maybe explore at their local game stores? Conley, I'm pointing at you with the pointing stick.
I mean, I guess, kind of, maybe.
You just, or do you maybe want to have like a new form of Iron Man Magic where everybody has to riffle shuffle their deck like 50 times and the last person with a card that's still together or enough for a legal deck wins?
No, I don't know. I'm kind of traditional on the F&Ms. Like, I like them being some structure and really friendly to new players, that like any new player could show up at your store and with a standard deck and they would be able to play F&M, whether it's limited or standard. And now you might travel cross country and not be able to do that. I mean, having access to the internet and people's schedules and stuff obviously helps, but I could just see there being some less of a unified feeling for F&M across the communities. That said, I am a big fan of people playing the formats they want to play. In some places, if they felt like they were being browbeat into playing Standard and Limited when they would want to do other things and they had to play that to get the foils and whatnot, then, like, this is a positive move for them, of course. But, I don't know. I'm all for people playing whatever formats they want to play. I personally will want to be attending Standard, Modern, and Limited for F&M for the most part.
So I totally agree with Conley that this is going to kind of splinter or kind of divide down some of the cohesion that you know F&M often represented, where, you know, religiously your store had, you know, 2 weeks of Standard, 2 weeks of Sealed, interlaced, and then if there was a fifth week, it was maybe Modern, you know, because that was sanctionable recently, within the last year or so. And so it was very consistent schedule, you knew what to expect, and that was that. You know, so obviously if you show up to the store and find out, hey, there are four different F&Ms you can play, you know, or there's two, like this week we have Sealed and Commander, you know, good luck. I think there will be some missteps like that. I think some stores will use it to cycle too much or not provide enough diversity. But I could totally see, like, you know, most stores like, okay, we're gonna have Standard and we're gonna have Seal, we're gonna have Standard and Draft every week, and then we're actually gonna do something different. Like, so 1 week it might be Commander, and so people that play Commander have an opportunity to do something and get some sweet foils. But I could also see like kind of like a way for the store to test the waters with other formats. You know, it's like, do people really want to play Modern? Well, let's go ahead and have it up against standard every Friday for a month and see which players play more or what player feedback is. It lets you put formats on a showcase like vintage FNM. You know, if your store has the right player base and the right people that are interested in that, you know, there's an opportunity to really delight or create a spectacle. Like if you're a local store and say, hey, if you have a vintage deck, come play FNM and get to actually play your deck this Friday, you know, at an event that isn't, you know, hundreds of miles away, like in Philadelphia this weekend or you know, requires you to travel to Gen Con to have like a sanctioned event for it. Like that could be really appealing. You know, like I think it's an opportunity that it's going to splinter things out, but it lets, you know, I think it lets savvy store owners do a lot more with it and kind of maybe expand and introduce players to formats that they otherwise would just skip altogether. Like, oh, this FNM's modern. Well, I'm not going to go because I don't have a modern deck. Well, now they can actually see modern decks in play, and maybe, you know, maybe that'll be the carrot that kind of leads them down a different path in the future.
All right, guys, this has actually been a pretty long podcast, so we're going to wrap it up a little bit. But to end this on a high positive note, because I want to be positive.
How do you wrap it up a little bit?
It's just like wearing a thong.
I mean, isn't wrapping it up like bringing it to an end, closing it? How do you do that partially?
Hold on. No. You know how to wrap it up a little bit, Conley. Have you ever gotten a gift for someone and the way you wrapped it was to cut a giant sheet of wrapping paper, put it in the middle, grab the wrapping paper by the corners and just pull it up and then put like a bow or just tie the top of it so it's kind of wrapped up a little bit?
You listen to me. I am maybe the world's 17th greatest Christmas and present wrapper in the world. You understand me?
I'm present wrapping. I want a video of you wrapping a present that you send me. I want video proof.
Wait, this is just a con to get a present out of me.
You're the one claiming to be the 17th greatest rapper on the planet.
Yeah, there's so many ways you could cheat wrapping a present, man.
That's right.
I mean, I don't need to cheat. Cheating's for losers.
Sounds like a 90s. Yeah, don't use drugs.
All right, Tom. What's our high note? What are we pulling the Costanza on?
What are you guys dressing up for as Halloween? Or potentially, what are your kids dressing up for as Halloween? That would take
my costume is loving father.
Like the loving father that goes to jail, or like, hey, I just love my kids.
Yeah, like I love my kids. That's my costume. Is I'm just gonna put on my mask and be like, my kids are the greatest things on the planet. Trust me.
So I'm assuming your daughter is dressing up for Halloween.
Yeah, we're not sure if she's gonna be a bear like thing or a dragon. I guess
a bear like thing or a Shiva dragon. We're not trying to get too specific today.
Yeah, it's allegedly a bear, but I'm not exactly sure that's really what it is. So.
All right, Conley, where are you going for us Halloween?
I have no idea. I don't know if I'm doing anything for Halloween. I haven't planned a costume. If I go, it'll be very impromptu. I don't know.
See, having kids kind of changes that, where your Halloween tends to be very scheduled. Because, like, kid events tend to be in the early evening and not actually on Halloween.
Sure.
So
I don't know what to tell you. I got nothing special.
I'm telling you, I'm going to hopefully motivate you to go get a costume because I think we're doing pretty well. My wife is going as a Cleopatra because it was a cheap costume. So, bam. Two, I am actually going as Doc Brown from Back to the Future, but it's the future one from Back to the Future 2. Just think about it. It's where he's wearing like the gold jacket and the gold pants.
I'm thinking about it. All I can picture is you as Doc Brown in Angels of the Outfield, though.
Oh, that, I take that. Doc Brown, pretty much anything is a worthwhile costume. And then I don't know if you've had this, Adam, with your daughters. Amelia likes to change her mind on her Halloween costume about every 14 to 15 minutes. So currently it's down between Elsa from Frozen or a mermaid. And sometimes a leopard. That's something else you can throw in there too.
See, we don't provide our toddler open-ended questions like, what do you want to dress up as? We provide two options. You can be this shady-looking lion or a dragon.
Yeah, but that's where you get the world's best answers. Like, what do you want to go at? And you're just like, wow, that was I'm not sure where you heard that, but that is disturbing, what you just told me.
Well, considering when she thinks of Frozen, she thinks Kristoff is Christmas. We really don't want to mix our holidays that hard.
Well,
yeah. Adam likes to mix his holidays. Lexi mixes drinks, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't at all, actually. It's
girly drinks.
I guess I probably have never actually had a man drink in my life. Like, I was trying to think to date. I think the only hard liquor I've ever tried would be rum. I've never tried anything else.
This is a problem I can solve for you, Tom.
Yeah, I guess I'd probably say I probably prefer girly drinks. I'd say they tend to probably have more flavor and less burning of my throat.
All I'm saying is that as sexism slowly decays over time and hopefully is gone completely, the one place it will be acceptable to be kind of awkwardly sexist is when you're talking about your alcohol. I don't know why, but it works. So we got it. Girly drinks for Tom.
Yeah, so to keep this, I'm going to have Adam fully wrap it up by going through where you can find us and contact us. But I did want to say we have an email. I'm going to save it for next episode because it got a little long. But Eric Wong, Eric, we got your email. I promise we will read it next week.
So to wrap up MTG Potpourri this week, just wanted to give a quick shout out to the people that shout out about us. The Magic Man Sam 3 on Twitter, Sam Gaglio. Has his own YouTube channel, has made some videos for Gathering Magic. Really liked our show. Thought, you know,
Adam, stop. What happened to Magic Man 1 and 2?
I don't know. We should send out search parties.
I'm kind of worried.
We have Magic Man 3. That's what's important.
Did we check Magic Man 3's trunk to hear if there's like any odd rattling when he drives down the road, or if he's been buying a lot of rugs that are like person sized?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to imply that Magic Man 3 has
wrapped
up the corpse into a rug, because it has to be a man-sized rug, put them into his trunk, and like most of us, I don't know how to get rid of a body. It's one of those things, you learn it as you do it.
You're about to say like most of us, and then talk about getting rid of a body? Yeah,
I'm assuming there's a few people out there that would be able to be like, probably list out 5 different ways to get rid of a body if they were so asked.
Let's not go down the road
by their victims
of making MTG Potpourri evidence in future.
Your friend for homicide.
Potpourri is a much longer word than MTG, so we have to talk about random crap like 70% of the time, and then magic the 30%.
This was a very heavy, very heavy magic podcast, actually.
We're not done with the shout-outs, because Ty Roman and MTG and H. Dolan all on Twitter tonight were like, hey, really excited. Last episode was really strong. Keep it up, guys. You are my favorite podcast, and can you release it like tomorrow? They want to hear us tonight, tomorrow. It's not going to happen. It's going to be on Monday.
No, it is.
You're going to listen to this on Monday. That's
I'm going to call them personally and leave them messages on their voicemail.
How tall are you? I need to go buy
rugs. Sounds like an idea that I don't want to get involved with, because mainly, how did you get all their phone numbers? That would be my question. But
I'm the conqueror. I can get whatever I need. That's all I'm saying, right?
it's like you ate like a really old like Orange Julius, and now you're now intoxicated on this podcast. Did I just age myself? Do people know what Orange Julius is?
Yes, we all know what Orange
Julius is. I didn't know if it was. I haven't seen one in years.
I had an Orange Julius like 4 weeks ago.
Hell is an Orange Julius? I've had one. What is it?
It's just like Tang with sugar and frothy cream.
You don't know. You don't know. That's the point.
No, it's like a pre-made mix that gets turned into. I mean, I've been a barista, so I know like similar products that are not specifically Orange Julius. But it's just like a powdered substance that you add like milk and other protein to, and then it becomes just like frothy.
It's a little bit of blood.
No, there's no blood.
It's the same thing as like Frosties at Wendy's or soft serve at most places. It's just a prepackaged thing that
it comes like in a big bag.
Delicious chemical.
Okay,
it's great. But we are MTG Potpourri. I'm Adam Sikorski, the doctor, allegedly for humans, but we pretty strongly suspect it's actually animals. Tom Gustafson, long-time Pro Tour player, grinder, deck builder master, Conley Woods. You can find us on Twitter at MTG Potpourri. You can email us, mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. Bonus points if you correctly spell potpourri for the very first time you contact us.
Yeah.
It's a big one.
I'll give you an extra
planeswalker points. On Twitter, I'm the_Stibs, STYBS. I'm also all over Gathering Magic, the content manager, if you will. I also write Thursday column, Serious Fun. That's the column I used to write. Thursday column, Command Tower, on MagicTheGathering.com.
Which is not fun, which is why it doesn't have fun in the name.
It's very
by definition unfun.
You can read my stuff over at channelfireball.com. Also watch my videos there. And also tcgplayer.com, where I produce content. And then you can listen to my voice on Gathering. Oh, wait. We already talked about that.
I mean, do you also have a regular Twitch feed?
I do have a Twitch feed. It's not regular by any means. Conley81, which is also my Twitter handle. Both my Twitch and Twitter. Maybe I'll stream this weekend. I don't know. They won't know because this doesn't go up till Monday. But I stream like a couple times a month, I would say. Not regularly.
And for me, I have no other stuff, so I basically am just here. And if you want to reach me on Twitter, it is PSG Reader.
Passage Greeter.
Yeah, whatever. If you can spell potpourri, you can figure that one out. But I feel like I'll have to explain that one every single podcast until I die. It is interesting that you can change your name on Twitter, but obviously you can't change the handle. So I do feel bad for like 12-year-olds now who are just picking terrible Twitter handle names and are not going to be – because I'm assuming social media is not going to go anywhere. I'm going to be plagued by that in the next 10 to 15 years.
You can get a different account. You don't have to like keep
using – you have to stay with FartPillow69 and so with that until you die.
Also, who would use Fart Pillow 69? They're advanced enough to know what a 69 is, and they're going to call
themselves because Fart Pillow 1 through Fart Pillow 68 have all been taken.
Yeah, when I was 12 years old, Fart Pillow 69 would have sounded like an epic.
Absolutely. That's what I mean.
So challenge for this week. Listeners, thank you for calling us out on Twitter. Here's how we're going to end the episode. Email us. An email. It could be anything. It's just saying, hi, I like this. Hi, I don't like this. Hi, Adam, you're an idiot. Whatever it is that comes to your mind that you want to send in. But use the absolute worst email address you actually use. So this isn't go out and create a bad email address. It's you have an old email address. You still have it just for like recovery and backup. But it was something you created a long time ago. And you don't use it on your professional documents and interactions. Send us an email from there. I want to see the worst actual emails that our listeners still use.
Yeah, or you could maybe I'll make a compromise. You could email from your normal email address and then tell us what that one is.
I'm not going to believe you.
This would allow for some creativity.
Yeah, that's true. You're going to have a lot of people that don't really send in real submissions.
If they send
it from that email,
I just want emails.
That's fair, Tom's. Sad.
Make Tom happy. Send us emails.
I like
this. Him. Has been MTG Potpourri.
I'm not going to let you end it. I always end the podcast.
End it.
End it, Tom. End it.
All right. Thank you, everybody. And I'm going to go look up what's in an Orange Julius. So have a good night.